Anyway, here comes Stefan Sessegnon now. He's striding forward. He's going to shoot. And yes. He scored. Stefan Sessegnon from outside the area. Robert Green embarrassed again. Can he get a shot? He can. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Bill Bradley picked that one out. And it's in. It's there. It's a goal. Oh. What a screamer.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the 100th episode of the Rooker Report podcast. We are here. We made it. That's the kind of excitement I'm looking for from Chris Weatherspoon.
Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
Very good.
Very
good indeed.
It's been an interesting month.
It has. April has been surprisingly good.
It's not over yet either.
It's virtually over.
Well, we've got one more game. Yeah.
One more win.
Hopefully, yes.
And Michael Graham's here as ever, as if he'd missed the 100th.
As if I'd miss it. I've been here for pretty much all of
98 of them or something.
Well, actually 99, because we had that one that we lost.
Yeah, kind of 100 last week.
That was only me and you on it.
Yeah. Never saw the light of day.
Which is probably for the best, because it was fairly shit.
We just spent it all slagging off you, Chris.
Yeah. Fair enough. I never listen to it. Whatever you like.
Right, well, we were going to usually start with big 3 points. We have a guest for the 100th show, a local journalist who everybody probably knows. If you don't, what the fuck have you been doing with yourself? It's Mark Douglas. So I'm going to dial him up now, and we'll get him on the line to talk about Paolo Di Canio, Martin O'Neill, Sunderland, all that sort of carry on. So, April's been quite a month for Sunderland. Going from the dying embers of the Martin O'Neill era to the Paolo Di Canio firebrand start to things. What's it been like from your side of things, like the way it died off and the way it's all kicked off now?
Well, I think the situation of Sunderland really this season has been that it's almost been a non-story really until the last couple of months. It's been so attritional really over the course of the season. There's been weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks that have gone by where Sunderland have been picking up, you know, the odd win in three. Martin O'Neill was becoming increasingly sort of intransigent in the things that he was saying. We were getting very little sort of insight from him really. It was becoming a tough club to cover really. We were having the same players were really coming out and really all they could say was the same things. It was, you know, there was a real lack of kind of story coming from Sunderland, and that was, you know, partially really down to the fact that there wasn't a lot to say about the results. And suddenly about 3 or 4 weeks ago, it just all suddenly was turned on its head, and it's been fascinating and really refreshing to cover the first weeks of Paolo Di Canio. Obviously the first week was, highly controversial. Personally, I thought that at times it did feel like that story was taken possibly beyond the logical extreme that it should have been. You know, it was a story about Paolo Di Canio's personal beliefs. It was, I didn't find it particularly edifying to cover. But then the last 3 weeks have been phenomenal, really, just in terms of what Di Canio said, the results that he's got, and the energy that he's breathed into the whole club. It's been terrific, really. And you know, you felt very much like it's a club again that has its mojo back, if you will. And you know, I think they've gone from being really a club that where there's not been a lot to say about them to a constant stream of stories. It's been really, really, really good. And I'm just delighted that we're beyond the kind of the tough weeks really at the start of the season, when it did feel like, you know, you go in to see Martin O'Neill and really he'd be telling you the same thing, and occasionally you'd feel like really he was insulting your intelligence a little bit, telling you that the team were playing well when it was clear that they weren't. You don't feel like you're going to get anything but flannel from Paolo, I think.
I think as well, like despite the poor results under O'Neill, it did catch a lot of people by surprise. I mean, were you surprised as anybody else?
Completely, yeah. I'd gone to speak to Margaret Byrne about 3 weeks before, and she'd be full of praise for Martin, saying that he was the club's man, he was the only person going forward. O'Neill himself was very much giving the impression that he was under absolutely no pressure whatsoever In fact, I think the 2 weeks before he went, when he gave a press conference where he said that the club had very, very little true ability, I thought it was an attempt by him to flex his muscles a little bit and force Ellis shorthand, because he kind of knew, he kind of felt in a way that he wasn't under pressure with the supporters, wasn't under pressure with the board. There were none of the signs that you get from clubs that there's that kind of friction internally. And of course, I think the fact that Martin doesn't really have a lot of people that he kind of trusts in the media, a lot of people he doesn't talk to really. We certainly didn't get any impressions of those frictions. I think it was kind of in a way just a sign that, you know, that Ellis Short, is incredibly ruthless. I think he saw the way that it was going. And possibly he maybe took the decision before a lot of us would have done. I mean, I would probably have done it when he did. I maybe would have kind of looked a bit earlier in the season when things didn't seem to be going right, and possibly I wouldn't have even done it at all, to be honest. But it had to be the right decision, hasn't it? But yeah, completely. I think it was one of the most surprising managerial decisions of the 5 years that I've been here, and I've seen some pretty crazy things, including Joe Kinnear taking the Newcastle job. So yeah, it says something, but it probably was the most surprising managerial change that I've seen in the 5 years I've been here.
That 24 hours was just absolutely crazy, from O'Neill going to Di Canio being in. Such a quick turnaround. I mean, that was partly one of the biggest surprises of it, really, that it seemed as though, from the outside, as though it might have been something that had been worked on for a while. Do you get that impression at all?
Yeah, I think I think the fact is, with somebody like Ellis, he's probably taken a look at maybe what happened at Wolves at the end of last season, and decided that, you know, if he wanted to make a decision, he had to make it quickly. It was a criticism at the time that there's not a lot of people with maybe football experience on the board in terms of that. That sounds a bit harsh, but obviously they've all been involved in football for the last, you know, 5 to 6 years. But before then, there had been Niall Quinn, who made sure that the transfer from Steve Bruce to Niall Quinn, to Martin O'Neill went very, very smoothly. And I think you saw there, it was the way that the club handled that was pretty much exemplary. I was surprised that he was able to do it quite so under the radar as he did. Paolo Di Canio obviously has people that he knows. But my understanding is that he actually did all of the negotiation on his own, Paolo, which I found quite interesting, really, because there's been the tales from Swindon that he had an agent who was the head of recruitment there, which was, you know, so I would have thought that somebody somewhere would have known something about it, but I think it was being worked on, maybe not for a long time before the decision was actually made, but probably about a week to 2 weeks. I think the decision by Martin O'Neill to try and flex his muscles and say that the squad had very little quality, I think made up Ellis Short's mind. I think that he decided there, this isn't going to work, because this is a man who's going to come to me in the summer again and ask for more money, and I'm not convinced by what he's doing. But Ellis works in the shadows. I've met him 3 or 4 times and always been really impressed by him. Always been a bit disappointed, really, that he doesn't do more stuff on the record, because he's actually a really funny and, you know, very interesting guy. But he works on the shadows, and I think that we saw that from this decision. It was, in some ways, it caught a lot of us by surprise, because we don't have those links to Ellis Short, and Ellis has made that deliberate. I don't think he wants those links with any journalists. So it does make the club slightly challenging to cover, and probably explains a lot of what happened in the immediate aftermath of the Di Canio decision. But ultimately, you know, he's the one at the moment who looks as if he's made the right decision.
What's Mr. Di Canio like in the kind of press room and everything like that, like as a person and things like that? What are your impressions of him as a man?
Yeah. I just like interesting people, really. I like the press conferences where you go there and you don't necessarily know what line you're going to get. You can kind of ask somebody a question and they're going to take it on. And I just find Antonio a really interesting guy, because I think he's intelligent, which is good. I think most of the managers that I've dealt with down the line have been intelligent, but they haven't always been keen to sort of engage with the questions that you ask. And I think that, obviously, at the moment, most of the questions are about football, and we're sort of staying off other things. But I think this will be similar to Roy Keane, and he's got an opinion on something, and he will not be afraid to sort of talk to you about it. So at the moment, I'm just kind of enjoying and really kind of relishing going and speaking. And having said that, when you listen back to the tapes, sort of 20% of what he says is pretty unintelligible, and you're really not sure what he means by it. But it's the fact that the other 80% is fantastic, and I think you're probably seeing when you look at some of the the quotes that have been written up in the papers, there's usually a fair amount of deciphering that goes into that. And we've started to normally, we go in one person will say, I'll put their hand up and I'll say, I'll do the transcription. At the moment, we're sort of chopping it up into 10 minute bites because it'd be a cruel and unusual punishment, I think, to ask anybody to sit there and wade through 80 minutes of the cameo because it's not, he talks quickly and it's not always clear what he's, what the point that he's getting at. But yeah, no, I'm finding it really interesting and, you know, I'm enjoying covering the club at the moment because, you know, they are fantastic to cover and he's just a character. And I think, you know, at the moment in particular, it's just a really good story to cover.
As well, he's done some, obviously the results so far have been nothing short of fantastic, really.
Yeah.
Barring the sort of expected defeat at Chelsea, but even that was an improved performance. Mm. I mean, what have you made of the complete turnaround and the way he's managed to inspire a very uninspired looking squad into
yeah,
what
I
we're
think,
seeing now.
I think, yeah, I think it's quite interesting because we always look at managers and sort of say, well, what has he done? And you know, I think we always try and kind of say, look, there must be some kind of secret, if you will, there must be some kind of magic formula that he's doing. Actually, what it seems to me like he's doing is he's got a pretty functional team working to their strengths, which is hard work. They're well organised, and finally, they actually seem to have a bit of confidence in themselves. And I think the secret is really no more than hard work, which is really it's really surprising that they weren't working under Martin. But I think that they were so timid. I don't think he was putting the kind of work in on the training pitch that Paolo is. That's the simple difference. I don't think he's doing anything absolutely out of the ordinary at the moment. I think it's sort of quite a traditional way that he's, it's, you know, the formation and the system is quite orthodox in some ways. You know, I mean, he's very smart and he's obviously picking up on the weaknesses of other teams, but he's working with another manager's players. So he's keeping things very simple, which is what you kind of saw Fabio Capello do. With England, I think he turned them into a really well-drilled and well-organised team that worked well and played to their strengths. And I think that's what the cameo is doing at the moment. The really interesting thing is going to be, and this is why I'm quite excited about the future looking forward to cameo. There's so many questions. As soon as they see more safety, there's so many questions for the cameo to answer. What's he going to do about recruitment? How's he going to turn this into his team? What is the power of the cameo Premier League team? Because at the moment we're seeing what Arthur cameo does when he inhabits the other you know, somebody else's players, but what is it, a Paolo Di Canio Premier League player? Is he, you know, is he going to look at the same kind of targets that Tony was looking at? Is he going to go abroad? Is he going to do stuff in the Premier League? It's going to be really interesting because, you know, as I said, at the moment, they're still quite functional. They're working really hard and I think that's a big difference. And they're committing themselves, in attack, which is what they weren't doing under Martin. But I think probably it'll be a different team next year. I don't think the same way of playing or the same personnel next year. I think it'll be complete. And I think the Canio will probably be a little bit more ambitious than some of them have been so far.
Kind of leads nicely onto the next question, really, which was going to ask about, you know, what we might expect in the summer. Has there been any clues at all, do you think, about the kind of player he wants to bring in, the kind of mentality of player or the kind of even just positionally, really?
Yeah, well, I mean, the really interesting thing is that you know, I'm interested in what happens with Pop Robson over the summer because Pop was obviously brought in while Martin was there. You know, I never really got the impression that Martin was entirely sold by Pop. He was obviously brought in from Steve Bruce. I never got the impression that was a kind of, you know, that a lot of the signings were necessarily Pop's. I never knew where the delineation was, which were Martin signings and which were the ones where Pop was putting the suggestions in. I think that possibly he was a bit sidelined under Martin O'Neill. Now, where do Sunderland go in the summer? Does Di Canio speak with Pop? You know, is maybe going to be a situation where he looks to bring in his own recruitment team? That's the interesting thing. And I think that, you know, I mean, a couple of the names over the weekend that I saw mentioned were people that Pop Robson was looking at on behalf of Martin O'Neill. Now, will Canio go down that route? I don't think he will. I have a feeling that he'll look I think he'll a midfield creator, and I think he'll look for another striker. Despite the fact that Danny Graham's done really well, I think that's another player. I think that's another issue that he'll have to look at. Will he persevere with Danny Graham? Will he decide to stick with Danny Graham? Because I think there will be changes, from a striker perspective. I think he will bring at least one, maybe two. And I think that he'll look for a midfielder. But I think he wants creative players. I mean, what we saw at Swindon, I was kind of doing a bit of research before Kenny came in about what he had at Swindon. And it was interesting what people were kind of saying to me that obviously they were quite functional teams, Swindon. They worked really hard. They were kind of similar to what he's got here at Sunderland, but a few people were telling me, the opportunity to scout him and players who might want to come to the Premier League will be one that he'll take, and he'll probably try and move Sunderland on a little bit and maybe look to bring in a creative player. But at the moment, in terms of actual names, nothing, because I think he's a lot of the players he'll be looking at, a lot of the players that, and the recruitment side is really a big question mark over that, because Pop Robson's role has been up for question, I think, for the last year or so.
Do you think there'll be something go on with the kind of director of football sort of thing that's been talked about?
Yeah, I that was my understanding originally, was that they were going to look to do something like that. I think that I'd been told that Ellis Shaw had looked at the model at West Brom in particular and been quite a fan of that. But then when Di Canio came in, one of the first things he said in that first week was that it was his kind of decision to be first team coach, and he wasn't bothered about manager, and there was nothing else in it. I think it'd be really interesting, because Di Canio has earned himself with these first 3 weeks is a lot more power in terms of what he does in the summer. I think Ellis Shaw will owe him one in some ways in the summer, and it will be him what he does. But I think there will be some movement there. I think there will be a restructuring of things. Ellis kind of watched under Steve Bruce and now under Martin O'Neill as well. Managers have quite a lot of power, and he's not been massively impressed with what either of them have kind of delivered really in the grand scheme of things. So I think he wants to get a bit more power back. He wants to have a few voices kind of putting into that recruitment and into a few other key decisions. And he didn't see that under Martin O'Neill. Martin O'Neill was one of the last kind of dictator managers in some ways. He had the final say in a lot of things, and he got a lot of those calls wrong, we've got to say now. I think that Short's kind of learned from those mistakes, and I think that he will certainly be bolstering the structure around the club, at least. I think that maybe not a director of football in name, but maybe some movement round recruitment, and maybe some movement round somebody else coming in, because it's quite a small staff there. If you look at it now, they've actually really only got Pop Robson, Mags Byrne, and Ellis are really the only three that I can really think of that are quite key there. He might look at bringing somebody in there. That's what I've heard. And it'd be really interesting to see if they decide to bring him, because that's a very sort of specific role. Really, they'd probably be looking at bringing somebody in from outside. But Paolo's going to have to get on with them, isn't he? Because, he's not... I wouldn't like to be the person who's brought in over Paolo Di Canio instead. So I think that one will be inviting trouble.
Chris, Mike, have you got any questions for Mark?
Yeah, I mean, with like O'Neill, did you ever like feel right at the end there that he just kind of like he had stopped having any kind of like faith in himself? I thought he always seemed really, really down to me. Was that the way that he seemed when he was like talking to you and like answering and things?
Yeah, it was really interesting, because in the summer we went, we were kind of invited. We were invited to Romano's for a kind of end of season meal. It was almost to kind of get to know him a little bit better. And I remember sat around, and he's a really sort of genuine fellow, really intelligent and kind of engaging company actually. But we kind of said, oh yeah, thanks for doing this, Martin. It's, it is nice to kind of get to know somebody on a more human level. And the thing he turned around and said was, oh yeah, it won't buy me any time when I'm under pressure next year. And it was like, it was a really bizarre thing to say, because obviously he was doing really well at the time and things were going well, but I think it was just quite self-deprecating, really. I don't think there was any kind of, I think that was in his nature, and it kind of worked when things were going well, because I thought, oh, well, he's just being self-deprecating. But when things didn't work, it did feel like he'd lost that kind of energy. I just felt towards the end that they were, I heard the players had a lot of days off it got a bit ragged, it got a bit loose, you know. I mean, I'd sort of been told, you know, that some days you weren't seeing Martin O'Neill at the training ground until maybe the Wednesday of the week, and I'm sure about that. I just don't think, you know, any, you know, you're giving yourself the opportunity really to work on things there, and I think that was the biggest thing, and that really ties into the idea that maybe that was okay 2-3 years ago, but you've got a new breed of Premier League coaches like you know, Andre Villas-Boas and De Canio himself as well, who seem to sort of spend every hour under the sun working towards trying to make things better. And I just got the impression with O'Neill that that just wasn't his way. But he was quite self-deprecating, really. And I think, you know, a lot was made of that he lost his mojo and he didn't seem to have that belief in himself anymore. And we were kind of waiting for the rallying speech and the big rallying cry. And it never came. I mean, one of my colleagues wrote a quite a scathing piece about him in the journal. Not scathing, but it was a really fair and balanced piece, in my opinion. But we were kind of waiting to see what comeback it got from Martin O'Neill, and he never said anything. And we were really surprised about that, because we were all anticipating that he would, you know, he would be really unhappy about it. And he didn't say anything. And you did feel a little bit at that point that, you know, maybe he's kind of got either bigger fish to fry, or he kind of, you know, he's not lost it. That's not fair. That wasn't fair in any way to say, but it just felt like maybe, you know, that fire in his belly had kind of been quelled a little bit by the fact that he maybe hadn't got the players that he wanted to in the summer, and he maybe did some of the job was just a little bit bigger than he thought it was at some point. And, you know, he was talking about doing things in the long term. It's quite the right for me. And, you know, sometimes you need to find that within yourself. And it didn't feel that it was coming from Martin. We were all kind of waiting for something. We all thought that he must have a plan at some point, but it didn't emerge, and he never got the chance to emerge because obviously things weren't going well.
Just one, I know it's hard to say based on what, like 3 weeks of De Canio, but do you think if the players were to kind of turn that way against De Canio, do you think he got it about him to kind of, you know, stem the tide, or do you think it would be one of those situations where the club should look to kind of really make the look changes on the field?
Yeah, sorry, I only caught a little bit of that. You just cut out there. I think, were you sort of saying that will he be able to make the changes when if things start to sort of tail off a little bit? Was that the
pretty much. Just like how, I mean, under Bruce by the end, I think it was kind of commonly acknowledged that he kind of lost the dressing room. And I think people are kind of coming around to that idea with O'Neill. Or from what you've seen and heard from De Canio so far, do you think that'll even get a chance to happen? Or do you think you'll be preemptive about it?
I think that's one of the other big questions is, you know, obviously things have been massively positive so far. And he's managed to create this momentum, but how did he go about challenging, you know, because these players' tendency is pop off. It's been two times when under Bruce and under O'Neill, they've linked with a terminal sort of tailspin. From the early days, I think that De Canio will just make changes. I think that he'll, you know, he will have sat there and assessed which players he can work with, which ones he can't. And I think that his key is he just needs a different kind of character. He needs other players in there, players who are going to, maybe guys like Lee Cattermole who can find something within themselves. I think at the moment in the Sunderland team, there's probably one or two players there who don't need an excuse to hide, basically. And I think that's happened under O'Neill. It happened under Bruce. Some of those players are now, but it happened under O'Neill. And I think the key will be, you know, the Canio will just have to change the makeup of the squad. Because I think it's inevitable that these players, although they're doing well at the moment, I don't think you'll see these performances from these players consistently, because I just don't think that, you know, there's been anything to suggest that they're going to be capable of doing that over 40 games or however long it is. You know, they're just not going to be able to do that, because you can come in and encourage them to do what they're doing, but at some point they're going to need something else, and they're going to need a bit of inspiration. Will De Canio do it? He's making all the right noises, you know. He's making all the right noises, but inevitably in football, you're going to go through a rough patch.
All right. Well, thanks, Mark Douglas, for your contribution to the 100th Roker Report podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at MSIDouglas, and obviously read in the journal and other places in the Northeast. You're probably wondering why this might sound a little different. That's because Chris isn't here anymore. He's not dead. I don't mean that, but he's not here as we are now re-recording a bit due to some shitty technical errors that have besieged about 85 of the 100 podcasts. However, there is news to follow on that, which we'll come to later. We'll tease that later. Keep you listening for a very, very big announcement on the podcast. So it's just me and Mike left.
Yeah. As it usually is.
Yep. We'll try and recreate some of the magic from Chris. I mean, there was all sorts. There was accusing one central midfield player of being gay.
Hang on a minute. That was you.
No, I was suggesting he had a very good game, and it was about time the world took notice of him.
Yeah, those weren't the words that you used.
Well, not quite, but we'll see if I use them again. There was a suggestion that someone else should start taking drugs.
Yeah.
It was wild. So yeah, we'll let you know when those bits are. we'll move on to Everton, though. Look back at Everton. 1-0 win. Two games in a row now, we've defeated two of our most difficult obstacles. That's different. It's a change.
Yeah, feels a little bit new. I really woke up thinking, so this is what it feels like to support a team who can beat Everton. It's the first time that
happened. That's quite good.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was a nice feeling.
Exactly. It wasn't as obviously nothing was going to top the Newcastle game, regardless really of what happened against Everton. But it was a very good, a different performance, a steelier performance due to the obviously much higher rise in quality of opposition than we faced against Newcastle. Yeah, it was great. very much enjoyed it for all different reasons. Certainly, Alfred and Di, who possibly enjoyed a coming out party, which was to say, he came out to. No, hang on. Everyone started to notice how good he is.
He came of age. We went through this last time. He came of age. He didn't come out. He came of age.
That's the phrase that people use, though. But not literally, you know. Even if he is, so what? Would you deny that, man?
I'm not getting involved in that. But no, I think... Yeah, I think that it was the first time versus these lot that we've actually had someone willing to stand up, like in the midfield, and say, you know, I'm not going to let you have it all your like own way. He was an absolute giant in there.
He was took Fellaini out of the game entirely.
He did. I mean, I think it was, you know, he didn't do much himself. You know, but the fact that he took him out of the game completely, it was just a huge, huge factor, like in the win.
Another, well, probably the most talked about moment was the back pass of sorts from Seb Larsson, who just was constantly denied scoring towards the South Stand. A string of good free kicks in the first half where, you know, I haven't seen him produce that consistent quality for a while. And he just thinks, fuck it, I'm going to leather one at Mignolet, force him into a save.
Well, Mick might have been bored, to be honest with you. He wasn't exactly, like, overworked, was he? I think it was the like only time they had to make a real save.
Yeah, I think the Jelovic chance was after that, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he was offside anyway, so.
But the offside wasn't given, so.
That's a good point. I didn't actually notice that. I just, like, assumed that it was.
No, it was a bit of a worry when he kind of bobbled it around in his legs, and I'm not sure. It was one of the ones where I'm like, is that a good save, or did he bobble it and nearly cost us?
But no, it was It was a strange moment.
And as you've pointed out, everybody not a sending off.
Not specifically not. Yeah.
Yeah. It actually says not for goalkeepers in the rules.
Yeah.
And the people that say denying of a goal scoring chance. It wasn't. It denied a goal.
Yeah, which he's there to do. He's actually paid good money to stop people from scoring goals.
It wasn't like there was an Everton player running onto it and Mignolet pipped him
through
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That would have been, possibly.
Yeah, but still not a red card.
Yeah. And do you know what? Something I forgot to mention in the first record was I do love a goal line stand from an indirect free kick in the box. Almost as much as a contested drop ball.
Oh, well, actually, Alfie, did you notice, he never flinched. He just stood there like an absolute brick wall.
But that's what you need. People treat them as normal free kicks, and they kind of jump in the wall and that, but what you need to do is just stand there and take it.
Take it like a man.
Take it like a man.
Actually, the roar from them, every time like the ball was actually stopped, just got louder and louder and louder. It was just for me one of the great soul moments, really. I mean, and actually, I have to say that the whole feel of it, it just felt like the soul's greatest days. You know how when it first opened,
early 2000s and 97 was a good season.
And there were just huge roars and not just that the noise, there was a kind of like a buzz there too. You know, that's what it was like. And it's not just because, we beat the Mags. I don't think you can just put it down, like, to that. I think it was just because people have really sort of, like, bought in to what we're actually doing now.
There's a different energy, isn't there?
There is.
Like you say, we've seen the players buy into it, and the fans are as well.
Great to see.
Any question.
Great.
So, yep, that's evident. We'll look ahead to Aston Villa on Monday. A win won't see us mathematically safe, but almost unquestionably in reality.
A draw will do, I think.
A draw keeps them below us.
Mm. Well, even if they win, they can't go higher than us.
Well, that's true,
a draw effectively keeps them 4 points behind with 3 games left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's going to be, and one of those is against the like other team actually fighting for it. So I think if we can hold them at least, I don't think that it means that both Wigan and Villa are going to get higher than us.
Who've Wigan got that weekend?
Wigan are home to Spurs, I think.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Yeah. I want them to keep staying neck and neck for the last game of the season. If it's a winner stays up, that would be fantastic.
It would be, wouldn't it? To be honest, it's just nice to be able to revert to thinking about it's going to be nice to watch like other teams scrap for it. Because you was every week you were starting to think more along the lines of shit, we're going to be involved. And now you're just kind of like thinking, you know, if this goes to the last day, I'll be amazed. For us anyway.
Oh yeah, definitely I will as well. It's only three, four weeks removed from being kept out the bottom three on goal difference.
Yeah.
You know, that's how fine the margins have been, but also how much we've improved.
I mean, I think we can realistically look upwards now. I don't think that we need to really look down.
No, I'm going to keep looking down just in case. Until we've got 40 points on the board. I'm not going to be 100% satisfied.
I think that we could look towards, you know, maybe 44 points for the this season.
We could end up finishing, 13th, 12th, something like that. That would be all right.
Heady heights, bearing in mind where we were.
Oh, well, that would who'd have took that in February? everyone. I think, well, even if there isn't a win against Villa, it's a very winnable game for a start. I mean,
yeah, let's move on seamlessly. Like Villa, have we started talking about Aston Villa?
We haven't actually talked about them yet. I mean, they look pretty shit most of the time I've seen them. The last time, it was the last time I watched Villa. I watched the Fulham game, And they did actually, first spell, they weren't too bad.
Yeah.
But over the course of the game, they probably should have lost.
Well, up front, they look fairly decent. They've got, you know, three or four guys who can really, really hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, they do kind of like come, they do have a good spell in a game rather than a good game.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to be a case of, you know, keeping it tight then and then hurting them when they get, you know, when they feel the need to throw absolutely everything at us. Because at some point, that they're going to have to really go for it. I mean, this game, I think, for them is their season. If they lose it, I don't think that they're going to stop up. So, and I think that they won't feel like they will either.
No, it's their season's almost on the line in this one.
I mean, it is.
It's not mathematically, but they have to be looking at the games they can win. And
yeah.
Much like us, we're fancying ourselves in our own games, especially, and they've got to be doing the same. But if we can keep if we can dull them from the start,
yeah,
you know, if we can bore our way through 20 minutes,
which we have done in the last two games, we haven't came like racing out and made a big start. We've just kind of like concentrated on being really, really tight. Keeping the sort of like game tight and then kind of like come out more into it as it actually goes on. I think that's the exact way we need to really do it here.
Yeah, we've got to take the sting out of it and turn the home fans on themselves.
Yeah, make them really nervy. Make them really nervy. Because their team is really, really young, isn't it? So I think if we can make it really, really nervy, I think that they might just crack under it.
Do you think, you look at some of the players they've got and you wonder how they're in that mess, really. What would you put it down to? I mean, like, you look at, like, Benteke is obviously quality.
Yeah.
Bent can't get in the team. had to let that one go in. Weimann's a good player.
Yeah.
That right, Lowton looks decent.
Charles and Zogbia is always.
And Zogbia, yeah. Well, he'll be on holiday and at Seaham Hall, won't he? Yeah. Especially if they go down.
I think that they they're usually quite good down the like sides, but the spine of the team, apart from really up front, it never fills you with any kind of like faith, really. I mean, if you look at it, it's blah. And who else plays centre back for them? Is it Clark?
That Baker.
And then in the midfield, it's Delf. They just have that really, really like a soft centre that, you know, we've seen us have for like years, and we know how it can really, really hurt you. But I just think that they're going to want to come down at the like sides. And that's going to be interesting because that's exactly where we want them to come.
Yeah,
we're going to be set up to basically let them have them, and we're going to say you're not going to come through us, if you know what I mean. If you're going to have to come really round us. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can the same way against a team who really want to do that.
Yeah, like I said, I think especially if go down the wings. Someone who probably will have a big role will be and die again because he'll, you know, if he's up against whether it's Delph, Westwood, Bannon, any of them, he's going to absolutely dominate them.
Well, this is the sort. I mean, it's like it's really one thing when he goes up against someone to specifically stop them, like he did the last two games, really. These are the sort of games where he needs to impose his own game. It's going to be an interesting test for him. I don't think he'll find it too hard if he wants to, if he's in the right mindset. He shouldn't find it too hard to really, really take on those guys and just swat them aside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he should be doing. I think I fancy he will as well, to be honest. If he's coming into it confident.
Yeah.
Which he should be off, probably his best game.
Mm.
So far. and I can't foresee too many changes.
No.
Gardner's back. I'm not really sure what I'd do with him, to be fair.
No.
Put him in for Colbeck? I don't know.
I would just leave him.
Leave it as edge, is.
Yeah. I don't see any reason to like change it at all.
No, unless you've got some sort of tactical master plan.
Yeah.
Which you may well do. But there's no real reason to change it up. Even up front, I mean, Graham had another good game against Everton.
He did.
Hopefully this is the week he breaks his duck, because I think the last two games he's definitely deserved it. What's your prediction for Villa?
I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw? I'm going to go for... I can't remember what I went for in the first take, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 win.
That's what you went for in the first take.
Is it? Well, then it's definitely going to happen then, isn't it? 2-1 win. 2 up, late flurry, get one, not enough. That's the way it'll go, and that'll be us safe. For all intents and purposes,
nice,
anyway.
It would be really nice just to get it done early. And then we can just sit back and watch everybody else suffer the way that we thought we were going to have to like suffer.
Yeah. So there's that. Generally, overall, to discuss the end of the season slightly, we're going to be all right.
All right.
And next season should be even more interesting once Decanio has put his own stamp on it.
I mean, like we actually mentioned earlier, with like Mark, you know, nobody knows the way that he's going to go. We've just got no idea what to really expect.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a real adventure, I think.
Yep. And he'll have, you know, he'll have Catamol and Fletcher back at his disposal and that as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how he uses those.
Very interesting. I think that we're always going to see the kind of the 4-4-1-1 with him.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to see that. That's just his game. I'm actually thinking about having something like on the site later in the week about that. If I find time.
Maybe save it for next week.
I might save it for like next week when I'm not here.
No, yeah, we'll get it written early and then I'll pop it up on there for you. Right, so there you go. Everything's gonna be alright. Question of the week. Well, several questions of the week, because for this 100th show, you ask the questions, and we'll just kindly provide our answers. So, we'll start on RokerReport.com, where JL Westbay asks us to to apply one of these to each of these fellows. Marry friend, that's in what do you call them, comment things. them, or kill. It's basically fuck, marry, kill, but he's avoided swearing, whereas we aren't. So, from the options, you've got the Horse Puncher, Pardew, and Shearer.
Right. Friend the horse guy, because I don't see much of me, so like mates anyway. I like ignore them all anyway, so I wouldn't have to see anything of him. He could just be out of my life entirely, like the rest of me mates. I would marry Alan Pardew. I've changed this from the first take. Marry him because I was thinking he's going to be pretty easy to catch having affairs. And then you're going to be left with all of his money. And a kill Shearer, just because why not?
See, I'm going the opposite. I'm going with, I'm going to marry Shearer.
Are you now?
Yeah, because, you know, just seeing how much he overcompensates with his love for us on Match of the Day.
Oh, God, I don't like where this is going one bit.
No, it's just staying there. People can draw their own conclusions from that. I will Well, I'm going to kill Pardew.
You need a friend.
I'm going to kill Pardew and I'm going to friend the horse puncher. Because I just can't stand Pardew's slimy face.
You see, what I noticed there is that you didn't say, I would. You said, I will.
I will. God damn it, I will one day.
That's a statement of intent for all three of them, I think.
Now I've seen that horse puncher's face.
Now that he's removed the scarf.
There's a very good point about that on the Football Ramble. Did you hear it?
I didn't know.
Right, well, basically he's unemployed. Mm. And when he had the... And now, nobody's going to hire the horse puncher. Really, are they?
No.
He had this scarf on and nobody knows what he looks like. Mm. And he started giving interviews revealing his face. So now everybody knows who he is. He could have kind of just said, no, I'm sorry. Let's leave it at that. But now he's kind of put his face out there and everybody knows who the horse puncher is now. So he's just done himself absolutely no favours whatsoever.
I've got to say, when he actually came out and said, I would like to apologise to the horse. I tell you
I'd love to see him apologise.
I just couldn't breathe. I was laughing that hard. I
mean, just to see him walk over to a field and say, look, mate, I'm really sorry.
Oh, God. It's just never going to stop being funny, is it?
No, not at all. Punching a horse. That was the icing on a beautiful cake.
I mean, that gave us so many headlines to use all of that like week.
The game was good enough in itself, and then someone punched a horse. Yeah.
Well, we actually mentioned this. It's the best thing about a derby is that you know that no matter what you do to them, like on the pitch, they're just going to make themselves look total dickheads off it as well.
Exactly. Next question comes from Warwick Hunt, who says, if you could create a fake name, what would it be?
Yeah, I just...
As we said last time, we can create fake names.
Yeah,
no good.
I think that what I would do is I would nick Nico Hulkenberg's name, just because that's a name that achieves things.
I was actually doing some work at work today for once, and I was thinking it's something somebody's name drew my attention to this, and it was a musician that's out there called Theophilus London, which I thought was an excellent name. It looks even better written down.
I couldn't spell it.
It's spelled Theophilus or something.
Yeah, fuck that. I'm not writing that every time I want to write my name.
I just thought that sounded like the perfect mix of like exotic and regal. It was excellent. So I'm going to steal his name and identity. on to questions from Twitter, at Roker Report. Where... Hodgy Lad, that's where we started, says, would you rather be a dog with a human's head or a human with a dog's head?
Yeah, I would rather be a human with one of the heads because it wouldn't be that larger like change. No one would really notice any difference, I think.
What kind of dog would you go for?
I don't know enough about dogs. Something extremely hairy, I think. One of them which has got so much hair, the hair is over the eyes, I think would be quite a good way to live.
I'm going on the same one. A human with a dog's head. But I want something that's a bit kind of wolfish.
Any reason?
Just think it would look the coolest. I think with the kind of the head of some sort of wolfhound, like a husky or a German shepherd or something, you've got the potential to be a villain, an international supervillain. So, and obviously that's one of my life's goals, so.
Which is actually why you've actually started this whole site, isn't it? This is just your evil front.
It is. This is my Daily Planet. What else we got? Red and White Forever says, anyone know where I can get some high-res celebration pics from the Derby? Yes, most places on the internet.
We have them, but we can't share.
We've got them. Exactly. Ridders 86. In the summer, what players do you think Tecanio will bring in?
Haven't the Scoobies.
Nope, as we discussed with Mark earlier, yeah. Ian got a clue. Your guess, if Ridders, you pick a player, it's as good a guess as anybody else.
Nobody has the foggiest idea. That's what makes it so much fun.
I fancy him, though, to spend big on someone.
I'm not sure if it's his style. I think that he'll...
I think he will. I think he'll want to, I don't know...
Make a statement.
Yeah. Mm. Not necessarily going to sign low, you know, we're not necessarily going to be the Galacticos or anything like that. And I'm not saying, I don't think it possibly will be even 10 million plus, it might be about 6, 8, something like that. There's someone coming in, I think. He's going to be allowed his one big, for keeping us up, I think Ellis will say, all right, you can have him.
A short two tips, £1,800.
Exactly, if you can throw that around. Mind you, that is, I think, a trait of owners. I remember being on the piss with some owners of Sunderland once, and didn't have to pay for very much that night. So, not going to say which ones. they were local and divided opinion, let's say. Right. Big Frost 5 says, funniest moments doing the podcast.
Too many to like.
Oh, so many memories.
So many. There was the one where you couldn't recall, like, O'Neill's name.
Yep.
That was only about 3 weeks after he joined, and you couldn't, he was the talk of the whole, like, world, and you couldn't remember his name. And me and Dave just let you suffer. We didn't help. That was good fun.
Thanks, lads. Yep. I particularly enjoyed you arguing with Chris that time for about 2.5 years.
It wasn't an argument. It was, I just taught him. I just taught him to stop.
I schooled
him. I really did. There was Dan and his constant plague. That was always fun.
Yeah, Dan was constantly ill. But, you know, these things happen. You know, you've got to accept these risks when you move to somewhere like France.
I'm fairly sure that he's still ill now.
It wouldn't surprise us. Let us know if you're all right, Dan. We just assume you've got a cold until further notice.
Maybe Chris, like, arguing with his entire household every single week.
Yes, that was really good. Especially since most of the conversations were on air. It seemed either didn't move too far away from his microphone or just didn't turn it off or anything like that. So there was a constant debate about people playing guitars or FIFA or driving motorbikes and things like that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a nice house to live in, if you ask me.
I think he said once that he was sharing with, like, 9 other people or something.
Yeah, students, man, students.
Yeah, I'd want to kill myself even if I was a student. Credit to him for not, but...
Hang on, how do we know that he hasn't killed one of them, though? Chris, to me, has always struck me as the murdering type. I think he's got that part of him which I think sooner or later he's going to snap. And he's going to kill someone.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, come on, man. You can hear it in his voice.
Not intentionally.
I'm just talking in fits of absolute fury.
Well.
It'll happen.
Be on the lookout.
It'll happen. I'm just hoping that it's not me, because I'm the type who makes people want to actually kill.
Maybe next time you just see... let him win that argument.
Oh, what about Dave when Dave's trying to get angry, but he just can't because he's too nice.
He is good when he has had some moments. I think it was towards the dying embers of the Bruce stage was the last time he was really angry.
A fury pee.
Yeah.
Which, I'd just like to stress, didn't happen on air.
No. it's still not as furious as punching a horse, either.
No, it's not. Ah, so many good times.
So many good times. Lots of good times.
Yeah, which is going to make our news later a little bit more...
a little bit more sad, isn't it? Sammy Surtees asks about Paolo Di Canio's ill-fitting suits. That is something we've taken note of and we'll be keeping an eye on it. Short trouser favouring. And Jamie Smith rounds things off with, do you think Paolo's Italian influence will lead to inspired facial hair a la Andrea Pirlo? Which player would suit it the best? Yeah.
The answer to this is always Seb Larson. I think that Seb Larson had an awesome Thor thing. Like if he did have that look, the beard look, he would just look like Thor.
Not sexy Olaf Melberg.
Not sexy Olaf Melberg. I don't think that's a thing. I think that's just words, to be honest with you.
I think, well, we decided before, really, the obvious answer is Carlos Quella. Because, I mean, yes, Seb Larson, but any time the question is, blah, 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 look good.
Seb Larson.
So, you know, he's always going to look good, unfortunately. He's that person.
He would look good. Oh, with a dog's head. That's
probably
the kind
would
of person
be a
that
really
is.
Sexy dog. It's just unfortunately cornered the market in looks. Carlos Queller, if he sorts that beard out a bit more. There's not really that many other suggestions, really, is there?
No, just remarkably ugly, really.
Yeah, I mean, someone like David Vaughan would just look even more mental.
Yeah. What about a Phil Bardsley? Because his face is quite round.
But I think he suits the look he's got.
Well, I wouldn't say that he... I think he could do a massive, like, beard. I'd like
more
to see
beards.
It. I would like to see it.
More beards.
I think, yeah. More beards.
Yeah, instead of this, obviously this Movember's a thing, but there should be a beard one. Yeah, I'll get all the players growing a beard. So yeah, there we go. That's that. Questions? Thank you for all your contributions. Might as well get to the big news, eh? The big news, which we kind of teased earlier, and you might be able to guess by just our general tone, is that not only is this a celebratory 100th podcast, it's also touched with sadness, because it's also going to be our final podcast.
In its current form,
yes. Basically, you know, what's happened is the previously described technical problems happen far, far too often. I'm kind of sick of getting up at 4:30, 5:00 on a Wednesday, doing some shit, going to work, coming back, doing some more, sometimes even rolling it over into Thursday morning a couple of hours before it actually goes live. it's just not happening anymore. But it's not the end. Whilst it's the final incarnation of the Rooker Report podcast, things are taking an upturn of sorts. Some of you might be well aware already. If you're not, I suggest you get aware.
We'll make them aware.
Oh, we will, yeah. we are kind of in a what started off as a podcast from another great Sunderland website, Salut Sunderland, with their podcast called Wise Men Say. Much like us, you know, just started it up. They have superior quality sound and everything on that front, basically. So rather than have our one and have their one, why not create some sort of ultimate voice of the fans in the podcast arena? So we're kind of piggybacking into them a bit. Mm. So they've got their podcast, Wise Men Say. You should look it up. And
which you all should know, because I've actually been on it.
So you've already been on it?
I have.
Yep.
Like, our writers will be on there.
Yes. They've given us a little corner of the podcast to air our views and things like that. So you'll still get to hear from us on a semi-regular basis. Yep.
It's a merger.
It's a merger of sorts, yeah. Admittedly, they're getting a bit more of it. It's not exactly 50-50, but we're going
to... But they're doing more of the work, to be fair.
They're doing more of the work. We're doing a lot of promotion. Mm. We're lending our support to them fully as the kind of... the view of Sunderland. The alternative view of Sunderland.
We're just, like, handing them the torch. Handing them the podcast torch.
Yeah, in the relay race of podcasts, we've done our 100. It's your turn now. maybe after an extended break, we'll be happy to bring this back. We're gonna.
You know, when we start to actually win leagues and cups and things, you know, that's when we can be arsed again.
Yeah. it's been quite an experience doing the podcast. We've had some really really good times. And things are still going to be good with this one. I guarantee you, it's a really good. It's still fresh, still new. They've only done what, about 5 or 6?
I think this week's, next week's is number 8.
Right.
I think. Yeah.
It's about that anyway. Still single figures, but it's a good listen. So.
And we'll do our best to make it even better for them.
Yeah, we're going to be 100% back in them. You'll find out on RokaReport.com when there's a new episode. You'll find plenty of links on how to listen to it and things like that. I believe you can follow them on Twitter as well, at WiseMenSay1973.
Yeah. And, like I say, we'll be on it as well, so, you know.
And yeah, exactly. So you're not going to miss out on the likes of me and him.
Although this may be the final time that we're on the same one.
It could be, yeah. We won't be. Well, it seems unlikely we'll be on at the same time. But everybody from RokaReport.com will be on their podcast at some stage. Well, our podcast, should I say. You know, we're getting a bit of it.
Yeah.
We'll get a little slice of the pie. Mm. You know, two podcasts become one and make it even better for everyone.
Exactly.
It's all about the listeners. So
it's definitely not about us and effort,
our egos or anything, or our work shy attitude towards things. No, it's definitely not about that.
Hey, after 100 episodes, no one can say that we haven't put in our shift.
Yeah, we've done it. I think we did, overall, we did good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hell of a lot of work.
More than people realise.
It is. It really is. There's a lot of early mornings involved. When you've got a full-time job as well, you know, if I had the option to, you know, record this at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, we'd have it out by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. but unfortunately, you have to put food on the table. You have to thank everybody that's been on, obviously. Just starts with you, and Dave, and Chris, and Dan, who was on for a bit. Luke, obviously, the pun master. Craig and Carl never made it, unfortunately, so you'll just never get to find out if they actually exist or not. Especially Carl. Craig's newish.
Yeah.
Carl didn't really have an excuse.
No.
But then I think he was terrified we'd take the piss out of his Welsh accent.
To be fair, we would have. We would have absolutely destroyed him over it.
Yeah, so if you're wondering how that works out, we just take the piss out of him for being Welsh.
Yeah, but, it's not a like anti-Welsh thing. We take the piss out of each other for everything.
Oh,
I mean, Dan for being Dan. Chris for being...
murderous tendencies.
Yeah. And no one's safe, are they, really?
Yeah. So, that's it. And obviously, the two guests we ever had, which were Mark today and Gary L. Smith when Asamoah Gyan left, who had some strong words for him. Mm. That was a good one
as
well.
That was a good one.
That was a funny thing from the podcast.
A greedy bastard.
Not just that, when he was really giving it to some to Asamoah Gyan, but one of the funny things, it wasn't really a moment on the podcast, but we had four or five people get in touch who didn't know who Gary was and say, I thought the fake African accent was a little... It was like, no, this is a real person. He's like proper, well-known, very, very good journalist on all things African. Football from Ghana as well. So, and when we said that, it was like, yeah, whatever. Here's his Twitter account, follow him. And he had the sense of humour to laugh it off as well. So,
Good times. So,
lots of good
thank
times.
Thank you to everyone for listening.
Yep, that's where we were headed next. The listeners, obviously, wasn't much point in doing it without you guys. So, if you've downloaded once, or there must be someone somewhere that listened to all 100.
You, I think.
Yes, actually. Can't be just me. Please let there be someone else in the 100 club.
Well, I suppose I have really, because I haven't listened to the ones that I've been on, but I listened to them by virtue of being here, and I've listened to the ones that I wasn't on. So there you go.
Fair enough. So there you go. Thank you for listening, every single one of you. And that's a wrap.
The ultimate wrap.
Yeah, you don't really know. I don't really know how to end it when there's not going to be another one, other than. get all over Wise Men Say.
Yeah, we'll see you there, and we'll see you there.
They're going to be on it. That'll be as of next week, so, get a follow, and we'll give you all the links and all the information you need on RokaReport.com, where we'll also have, a lot more written stuff now. We don't have to spend 3 nights a week doing this.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, the writing was always our, forte.
It was always the priority.
A raison d'etre, so,
So thank you to everybody. Goodbye on behalf of everyone that's not here. Goodbye from you, is it?
Yes, goodbye from me, but I'll speak to you again because I'm sure that you'll be heading over as I am. So goodbye.
Yep.
See you next time.
Yep, we'll see you all on Wise Men Say. So goodbye from RokaReport.com.
Have you ever seen a one-trick pony in the field so happy and free? If you've ever seen a one-trick pony, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-legged dog making his way down the street? If you've ever seen a one-legged dog, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. Come and stand at every door. And you've seen me always leave with less than I had before. And you've seen me, but I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more? Have you ever just seen Scarecrow filled with nothing but dust and weeds. If you ever seen that Scarecrow, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-armed man punching at nothing but the breeze? If you ever seen a one-armed man, then you seen me. Then you seen me. I come and stand at every door. Then you seen me. I always leave with less than I had before. Then you seen me. But I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more? These things that have comforted me, I drive away. This place that is my home, I cannot stay. My only faith's in the broken bones and bruises I display. Have you ever seen a one-legged man trying to dance his way free? If you ever seen a one-legged man, then you seen me.